This is Marketing Uncomplicated. Hi, everybody. I want to welcome everybody back to the show. I always have special guests, but we are going to have an amazing conversation with Allison, who I'm just about to introduce you to. Allison McComb is the owner of The Writing Concierge, where she's bringing back the art of writing. Hi, Allison. How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you, Sasha.
Good to see you too. So the typical form in terms of how we start this is we always like to know, how did the idea come about? What gap did you see in the market where you're like, I need to really push this. People need good quality writing. So I'd like to hear where you felt that the market was missing in terms of the need for your services.
So I would have to be honest in saying that I think I chose my own needs first. And then I thought, okay, now where can I put myself? So in my previous life, I know, you know, I was in public service for many years. I often was gifted communications and writing projects, mainly because people knew I gravitated to them, but I really enjoyed them. I love writing. I love editing. And that goes back for many, many moons. But when I wanted to start a business, you know, something that a faculty member said to me years ago just kept resonating, which is one, do what you're best at, but two, be true to, you know, what you can be, you know, really successful at. So I might be really good at, I don't know, knitting scarves, but do I think I'm going to be successful at pushing that business? Maybe not, right? Yeah. And she was saying this in the context of a totally different world that I was living in, but it has resonated with me for a long time.
Yeah.
So I knew that I loved communications. I loved recruitment and outreach. I really love the written word and how powerful that still is. I think we live in a really interesting time right now, and I know we'll get into that. But I identified first what I knew I loved and what I was good at and what I thought I could market as, this is my expertise, truly. Separate from that, I would say no matter where I've been, whether it's universities or local government or even more in the nonprofit space or now in the networking arena, there is no lack of communication that will go out and I'll say, wow, I don't think someone proofread that. I don't think someone edited that. I see a marketing flyer with just one letter off. I see apostrophes all the time in the wrong place. And that was really, to your point, where's the gap? It's that there's a human that still needs to have eyes on all of those things. And I thought, I know there's me and I know there's other people like me, but I don't know that organizations invest so much in this anymore because there are things that are done to such scale. Mm-hmm. But I thought with a smaller business, I could be more nimble and I could get in there and market us in a place which was for smaller and medium sized businesses to have this really a fractional person come in and do everything from smaller projects to maybe larger ones, but to give them more polish in what they were doing because we are positioning ourselves as people have, for me anyway, 20 years of expertise in working through writing, editing, and proofreading projects.
Yeah, no, I love that you say that in terms of really needing a human to kind of look over. When I was working at the last enterprise company that I was at, there were actually two proofreaders on deck. So everything that went through, because I think naturally as a human, the more you read over something multiple times, the more you miss. And if something's going out and you're a company that's a global company and all eyes are on you, it's very stressful. And there are people, I mean, it was a media company I was working for, and there are people that would write in to our PO box and tell us, you missed the period here, or this was spelled wrong, you know? So let's dive in. Let's really kind of connect the world that we live in today with the explosiveness of AI, ChatGPT, you know, the abundance of all of these AI platforms that are coming out, which is probably like, I can 10x your agency and I can write this for you and we can do that for you. It's overwhelming to say the least. I think not only just for entrepreneurs themselves, but I think for us, people who are in the business and the craft. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the connection of writing and what is happening, because it almost seems like it was the first thing to kind of bubble up, which was, we can really take writing out of the picture and cut it down.
Now, I'm glad you brought it up, because I think it's something that people, you know, sometimes writing doesn't get the credibility that I believe it still needs. One of the most unique parts of human interaction is communication and spoken and written communication. So I think we don't think about ourselves being as unique as we really are. So that's one thing. Separate from that, when you take that human part out and you give, you know, you give it to what is really machine learning. Sure, there's a robot that can generate, I'd say, quantity. But one of the things I learned early on, because I did start the business almost in tandem with when AI started to blow up. And that was not on purpose. It just was a strange timing, call it irony. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah.
And that was, those are the questions I got immediately. And I said, let's, you know, I'm not so worried. I'll test it. And there had been earlier, and you know, there were earlier renditions, I'd say, of AI type things that could generate summaries and basic things for you. And I was never really impressed with them. But once I started the business, one of the very first things I thought was, I need to get really good at AI so that I understand what it does. One, so that I can, you know, sort of speak to the questions people have about using it. And two, so that if it was going to be beneficial for me, of course, I'm going to incorporate it. I'm not naive enough to think that there's a tool out there that I would just let sit on a shelf, right?
Sure.
So I taught myself, you know, the more previous generations of what's now ChatGPT, Bard. Grammarly's been out there for a while. They have a little bit more, I'd say, street credibility than some other platforms. But now you have Monica, you have Copilot, you have, I mean, so many things that just pop up on your screen that are associated with, let's say, browsers or other pieces. And I've tested each one. Some are better than others. But what I can tell everybody without hesitation is there's a lot of duplication. There is still, to me, a worry about something that may not be fact-checked.
Sure.
Because what is happening is this is information that's mined from, think of it, I would say, for people to think of how AI gets built as being built on crowdsourcing. So it's gathering all this information and not in necessarily a factual way. Over time, it will get more, I'd say,
factual,
specific about citations and things like that and the facts, but it's not there. It's going to take a lot of iterations, but it's also, it's only as good as, and you've probably heard this as someone in the marketing arena, it's only as good as the prompts that you give it as well. So, you know, and I would say this is where the AI starts to break down. If you're a sophisticated writer and editor, you're probably going to create already more sophisticated prompts than the average person. So I think there's already a leg up in that arena. And the other part that I say to people is, if people didn't want to learn to write and edit already, they are not going to want to learn the much more, I'd say, valuable parts of AI, which is how to create really sophisticated, very good content generating types of AI. And so then it gets left back to, okay, just take it away. Take it from me. I want someone else to do this for me. So I've seen some of that already. I have seen, I would say in the marketing space, but in a lot of spaces, people say, oh, you know, we used AI. You can tell.
But it's a huge issue still for them to be doing that.
Because it's unedited. And I can tell. And so one of the early things I started to see, I'd say last year in starting the business, I would look at different, let's say different local businesses. And if a legal, if a lawyer came to me and was looking at some generic information, I started to realize the information was very similar across platforms. And I thought, oh God, everyone's using AI to do this. And again, not that it's bad in and of itself, but when it's unchecked and unedited, then you're getting such generic information that is, to your point, it's missing. It's just missing something. So I think there's still a space for the humans because there's voice, there's point of view, there's editing, and there's proofing. I have found mistakes in AI also, just to be extremely clear, whether it's passive voice, verb conjugations, just things like that, that they just get lost. So, you know, I think the more people use it, the more regular it is going to be part of our daily routine. That is why I wanted to learn it so that I wasn't left behind. But I think the sophistication in using AI is to use it as a complement to what we can do as humans and what we can make really phenomenal, as opposed to just saying, okay, I'm going to put in some kind of search string. And, you know, there's a lot of people now posting flyers about here's these prompts you should use, but everyone's using now those same prompts too. So people have to be very careful. I think they have to not give it up to the machines. I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, Terminator person, but really when we are on, when things go unchecked, that is a problem.
Yes.
And so I caution everybody, yes, use it. And I actually have other uses for AI that I think are much better for example, for my business than things I would want to do by myself.
Yeah.
And a good example of this is organizing content.
Yes.
I hate formatting. It just drives me nuts. It takes so much time.
Yeah.
You can pop it in and you can get a pretty good formatted, for example, like Works Cited. I hated doing that my entire life.
Yeah.
You can put it in, say you want AP style, Chicago, whatever. Boom. You got it.
And it fits it in.
That's some of the great parts of AI, that stuff comes out pretty accurate, but it's the generation of like really good copy and content that you have to be careful about. So it's there, it's a tool, but I think without paying attention to it, it could very quickly run off the rails. And I have had clients come back to me and say, we tried AI, or I can tell the web person or marketer that I, enlisted used AI. Can you rewrite this for us?
Yeah.
And I have to say, I'm not surprised. And when I read it, it's
generic.
So basic and droll. Yes. Yeah. So
yeah. It is so generic and basic. It's very true. And the one thing that I love that you bring up is that it is a problem for marketing and for marketers because of the simple fact of, I mean, essentially it's a war between Google and Microsoft, specifically as it relates to organic SEO. And it's funny because I get bombarded all the time in terms of organic SEO is the foundation, what everybody should be doing if they have a small business, right? Or if they have a local business, not even small, mid enterprise companies, they should all be doing it. But not everybody can afford it. And I think at its lowest level, you can now start to find people that can do it for you overseas that doesn't break the bank. But are you getting the most bang for your buck? We don't know, right? But if you are to develop content that has been developed by AI, Google is not going to accept it. And they're scrolling and they're understanding. So if people know what goes on with Google and organic SEO, they have every so often, they do their whole shift. And they do like a revisit on everything, just in terms of, you know, changing their algorithm, you know, changing whatever they do on their back end, you know, for their secret sauce in terms of how, you know, it really takes to you for you to get launched up on page one. But if you are, if you are someone or a business who has written with AI, it's going to be very detrimental to you because it will just take you 20 steps back, for example, you know? So, I mean, there's that. There is the point where you bring up in terms of, writing has a voice, you know, and we all can't start to sound the same. And this isn't what's happening with AI where it's like they're starting to copy, you know, people singing. And it's like, now you can actually go and sing into a microphone and end up sounding like Madonna or whoever, right? I think the emotions that come out of the written word is never going to change. And I think will never be duplicated by AI in that sense to be able to really bring it. From speeches to how you tell a story on your platform, how you talk through your Instagram account, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But I think those are really good points that you continue to bring up. Go ahead.
No, I've had to really teach myself more about SEO. That's not my forte. It wasn't what I came into this, thinking I needed to know more about, but I have realized I really do need to understand it better.
Yes.
So between learning kind of myself and reading, and then learning from people who are far better than myself and who do this day to day, I actually was in a meeting today with a guy who, you know, he just so naturally came off the tongue, all these things you should be doing for SEO. And I just kind of like, I even put myself on mute and I just watched, right?
Yeah.
But to the background point, I don't think people realize at all what any of that means and how that translates to their site and their audience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yes, if people really had the education of putting the tags, the meta links, all, you know, the things that I don't know all the language around,
sure.
But all the things I watched this particular individual do so easily today, he did it easily because he's mastered it. But there were so many steps that were so separate, excuse me, and apart from AI that I thought, wow, this is actually genius at work.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to me how many additional things go into content, right? Because then this is the driver behind it. So I'm probably not articulating that as well as what I witnessed today, but I was just so impressed with what it really took on the back end to architect
great word
really great
Formatting.
Formatting and also how things are driven. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate what I do and what other writers and editors do, but watching today, it was almost like a tutorial. That was like a masterclass in all the other stuff you have to do.
No, totally. Because in that aspect, you're looking for, how shall I say, you know, keywords that people are searching on in Google, and then they're being passed on to somebody and it's being asked, can you write a blog or can you write a narrative or write a headline or write a subhead that includes these keywords? So in essence, it kind of helps you a little bit, but it's a concept that I always like to say, you know, when I'm working with clients, like, tell people what you sell. You know, beautiful headlines are beautiful, but when it comes to like a website, and this is different, you know, off of the website, crafting like email marketing and those type of things is very different. And then we'll get into some of the stuff that you do as well, but it really is simplifying down, you know, almost to like fifth, sixth grade level communication, because it's like, these are what people are searching for. And what comes up on Google, it then shows up and then you show up as a website, right? So it's a different type of narrative. But so tell us a little bit about the type of clients that you bring on in terms of the support for writing.
So it's been interesting. I didn't know who to expect first, or kind of, you know, as we evolved as a business. Networking has been wonderful, as has been LinkedIn, and purely people that I've known in my past who know me as a professional in some other arena. So I'm very thankful to those people who've kind of helped us catapult right in the first year. I say we work in 3 to 4 columns. Individuals, we can certainly do resumes. We do personal statements, bios, things like that. For small and medium-sized businesses, we do quite a bit. I would say there's kind of 2 ways in which I work. Independently as a writing concierge, as the company, we will do ad hoc projects or retainer projects, which could be website copy, marketing collateral. We may not be creating the design, but we're doing all the language behind it. It could be the email communications or campaigns. We do quite a bit of recruitment campaign material too, because that is another area that I've worked in quite a bit and, you know, have residual contacts in that space. There's a second part of that, which is we have very good referral partners. So we work with digital marketers, PR and media firms. They have been wonderful with us, and we will just do a lot of white labeling for many things. In the marketing space, that could still be the website copy, content, social media, but PR and media takes me back to, and again, I was connected in this space with contacts throughout my life, and I feel fortunate because it's taken some of the stuff I used to love in my old jobs, which is press releases, white papers, you know, a little bit more, it's meatier type of writing. It's mm-hmm. more academic in my mind, bylines and op-eds. So we do quite a bit of things that may not have our name on it. But when I look at an article in a big publication, I know that was something that came from me or from, I have a few writers that write with us as well. So, and I'm the top line editor. So those are some of the things. And then I'd say the other column is kind of the bigger picture projects. We'll do proposals. Sometimes that's business proposals, but a lot of times that is when it could be some entity puts out an RFP, which is a request for proposal. Mm-hmm. We will help people put their bid packages together so that they're responding. And that's not just the writing of that. That's really project managing, if necessary. What are all the component parts? Does this bid even make sense for the organization, and putting that together for them? And there's some grant writing that I've done, although the caveat to that is it's probably smaller level grants that are more local, but we're still comfortable in that space because mm-hmm. it can look a lot like business proposal writing as well, or bid proposal writing too. So individuals, small and medium sized businesses, the referral partners that we work through, and then kind of this other column of the larger projects. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I like that. When I was thinking about proposals, because I work a lot with tech startups in the industry, and a lot of the times they're obviously going after seed money, you know, mm-hmm. Series A, you know, whatever they're running through. But that requires a craft to kind of put together, you know. And so tell us a little bit more about, you know, these type of proposals that you get for RFPs and stuff.
So I would say the majority of the RFP groups that I've worked with, or individuals rather, have been clients in they're consultants who want to either help a client mm-hmm. or they're a consultant in a very specific space. Typically, it is either marketing or HR kind of training arenas, because there are quite a few RFPs that live out there for those types of things. So what the RFP is typically calling for is, let me think of a recent one that I did, which was, it's actually more marketing. So a state wanted a marketing company to come in for 5 years and do XYZ. Now, XYZ is simplifying, because that's usually 30 things they want
sure.
a marketing company to come in and do.
Yeah.
But you have to, within your response to the letter, answer what each of those requirements is, and what the entity or the granting group is trying to figure out is if you can come in and hit the ground running in most cases.
Yeah.
Do you have the people, the technology, the resources to do the things that they need? And then what sets you apart in your space? Because other marketers, for example, would be competing for this. And, you know, what story are you going to tell? What's so compelling about the niche that you're living in that would make you the best fit for that? Now, so, you know, those are competitive processes. So you, who knows how many people may have applied,
yeah.
but to get your name in the ring is really, you know, it's exciting. And what I tell people too, is once you submit or put together that sort of initial large package, keep it on a Google Drive and then keep going back to it. Because once you have one or two packages under your belt, it makes it so much easier to write for those successive things, because you've already amassed, I would say probably 50% of each proposal looks pretty similar.
Yeah.
And then there's some differentiation on what they want to see that you can specialize in. But I enjoy it. And I think it goes back to putting pieces together. And sometimes a lot of it is people just don't have the time. It's not that they can't do it. It's they yeah. don't have the time. But to look at an RFP, and I'm sure you've read many, mm-hmm. right? They're overwhelming.
Yeah. You can have they're binders thick sometimes.
Pages and pages of, you know, and sometimes they do repeat. They can be very repetitive. So
yes.
sometimes they're asking for the same thing with like one or two words different. You know, who knows why some of those things happen, but the reality is you just have to be very careful to answer everything again to the letter so that you are in consideration without kicking yourself out for any reason.
Yeah.
It just takes time. It takes, I think, a level of sophistication. There's ones that I've put together that I'm much more proud of because we had more time, for example, to do that.
Sure, sure.
There's some that people say, hey, this is, we realize it's due in 3 weeks. And my disclaimer is we can put a package together.
Yeah.
Is it going to be the most beautiful thing anyone's ever seen? No, but so I'd rather do something like that, obviously, with more time. I think that would be my advice for everyone.
Yeah.
Give yourself ample time. But it's just a time and brain intensive project. And usually that's not just the writer or project manager, editor putting that together. Those are teams that I'm working with, whether it's the marketing firm or the consultant. And there's usually five or six, maybe other people in the background feeding information.
Sure.
So that we make sure everything's being answered.
I think it's interesting that you bring up that point. I mean, in my RFP days, because we're obviously receiving this from companies who may or may not have agencies that they work with. I feel like they need to hire somebody to help them put an RFP together. So once it comes to people like you and I or agencies, it's like, at least we understand that it makes sense. You know, these are the things that you need to be asking so that you can really, with a critical eye, start looking at people, because it's being crafted by somebody who actually doesn't even know what they need from an agency. You know, I mean, that just sparked in my mind right now. Cause I mean, some of the RFPs that I've looked at, to your point, there's a lot that's repeated. A lot that's repeated, and the questions are just rearranged somehow. And you're like, what's behind this? You know, and then you go into this rabbit hole. Give us a peek behind, you know, how you work, right? I mean, I brought up the point of, you know, decks for gaining funding and that kind of stuff. And one of the decks that I've, you know, been using through and through is by a guy, his name is Guy Kawasaki. He was like one of the original, you know, Apple investors. And he has this like 10 scripted deck. You know, this is how you need to be like telling your story. If you could share, without giving away your secret sauce, obviously, you know, just in terms of how you work through a certain process, you know, when building X type of copy, you know, for a business that really can kind of help them put that into like rhythm for themselves if they were listening to this.
I love that question. What happens is I think some people say, oh, I just need this. And I get sometimes just a document that for all intents and purposes is just a bunch of stuff in 5 or 10 pages. And it may, in fact, mirror the copy on their site, but it doesn't really tell me anything. And so what I also will advocate to people is if they would allow me to have extra time to look at really how their site is mapped out. Mm-hmm. Because every project, the way that I work is I need an outline for almost every project, maybe not for a resume, but certainly for a web copy, a marketing campaign, especially for proposals or bigger projects. I create an outline for myself and then I start to plug information in. For websites in particular, I really just enjoy site mapping. I may not come up with the same way that a client's website is mapped, and I'll tell them that honestly.
Yeah.
But that's only if they solicit that for me. If they just say, hey, write the copy, hands off, I will do, you know, what is asked, but I still work from an outline. And then I may use existing information, but more often than not, I have a couple different intake forms to help me with that outline. You know, what is it that they want to update? What is it? Is there a new voice that they're trying to introduce? I think target market's extremely important. Who are you writing for, or who's your ideal market? Because it's important to write generic copy that anyone can kind of look at a website and say, oh, I understand what they're conveying. But there's a way, obviously, to write to target markets in the language and speech and everything else. So I want to know that. I want to know if the company itself has already defined personality. And I think you brought this up earlier. What do they look like to the public already? What is their social media? Is it kitschy? Is it more classic? Mm-hmm. Is it straight business? That's a personality that marries at some point with voice, but sometimes there's already an existing personality. So I take stock of all of that, but the way that I prefer to organize is on an outline, but I will do, depending on the project, some variation of an intake form so that I can understand all the things that I just discussed, so that when I'm writing something, it's just as much as the client wants in there. Sometimes I don't necessarily have to, and I love these clients. They've obviously worked with other, I'd say, agencies or writers and editors, and they just give me everything already laid out.
Yeah.
But I think that they're seasoned, and they're often clients who are doing volume work. The PR and media firms, for example, will send me an email with almost everything that I've mentioned already bulleted and ask if I have any more questions, of course. But oftentimes I say, no, I think I'm good. I have everything here. Thank you for this snapshot.
Yeah.
We're off and running. So, you know, there's ways that I prefer to work, but also clients who just inherently get it and kind of set me on the path very quickly.
Yeah.
And even for the people who need maybe a little bit more, I don't want to say prodding, that sounds awful, but I guess more help in structuring, I try to gently, you know, finesse that by saying, hey, why don't you fill out this form?
Yes. It doesn't have to intake be, form.
Yes. It doesn't have to be full sentences, even just
bullets.
What's on your mind based on those questions, because it's really just a guide for them. And more often than not, I think people enjoy that because it's like, oh, okay, I don't have to really, whatever this project was that was already stumping me or I didn't have time for, now I can just say, I'm going to run through it and we'll give it to Allison and, you know, a writing concierge will take care of it. So that's kind of the, that's what I've learned. It's the outline part is something I've done probably my whole life. Even when I was in college and grad school, I outlined all my papers, all my projects. So my brain just works well that way.
Yeah.
The intake process and things like that, I've learned along the way from other people who do it already, I'd say very well, and have been working in the space far longer than myself as a very focused part of what they do.
No, I love that. I think all of us that come from a similar background work in that process structure. I remember when jumping out of enterprise and going into the startup world, I was like, okay, we got to put some structure in place here because it's insane. it's crazy, you know? But you know, I love the sense of, you know, the more we dive into this, and obviously I'm inundated with this because I come from a marketing background and I do marketing for my clients, but content is everywhere. And one of the biggest things that, and I think people tend to miss that the importance of it. And I really want to push this, you know, because we have you on this podcast and, you know, we're talking about copy and content, but at the end of the day, it's like, when I go back and I do an audit, when I work through my 3-part process with my clients, it's where is the missing piece? And typically the missing piece is always within the content, because it's always the fact that you're confusing people more when they land on your homepage or your website or wherever. You're still confusing them when they're on your social medias and like wherever else they are. Or maybe it's the way somebody is communicating who works at your company is not really explaining it the way it should be, and so on and so forth. So really the optimization will always tie back to content. So if we really want to talk foundation, content is king. And everybody's heard that statement. If you haven't, you know, you're just starting off in your journey, but content is king. And it is the groundwork and the beginnings of building anything that you do for marketing and pushing your business.
Absolutely. And I have to say, I have to give a particular nod to a marketer I started working with for myself three to six months ago. That is his central focus. Content is king. I hear it. I see it everywhere. And we kind of work with each other. I will work with him on writing projects and vice versa. He'll work with me on the marketing. But I that particular person and his firm have really, whether they realize it or not, I've been watching in the background to see how they do things and push things out. And podcasting is something that they are really big on too. And I can just appreciate that they have narrowed it to exactly content is king as much as storytelling mm-hmm. is also chief among having a hook and having an audience and really having something compelling to share that doesn't sound and look like everybody else.
Yeah, totally. And like I said, it's the foundation of everything. I mean, you know, one of the things that we build is, you know, your mission, your vision, you know, what is your brand architecture? And that's all content, because the brand architecture is basically, for a lack of a better term, going to be a business's Bible. It's always going to go back to that. It's always going to refer back to, well, what is our main mission? What are we trying to accomplish? Or what we used to call it at a media company I worked for, like, what's your single most selling message? If you could say it in one sentence, what is it? And it forces you to push yourself in a direction to really simplify things, to explain it, because if you can't explain it, then you're confusing people. It's like how they always say, if you can't explain it to a 5-year-old and they don't get it, then you're doing yourself an injustice. So tell me, what do you think or feel in terms of coming across particular audiences that have been barriers? Maybe they're not, because once you have conversations with people who are teetering, whether to, you know, begin working with you, or they're like, you know, I can do AI. You've already mentioned that people have come back and said, we've tested AI. You know, we're sweating bullets. We don't know which direction to go, and it's not working for us, which typically we haven't gotten to a point where it is working, and whether it is going to work from a full force, we don't know. But like you said, it's helping us for certain things, but it's not nailing it right now from, like, you know, here's a website, here's the industry, here's what they want to say, here's the tone, boom, spit it out. Right. So let's talk a little bit about that in terms of what you're feeling from clients that are coming your direction that don't necessarily sign up from that standpoint.
So, you know, I think there's people live in a couple worlds, right? I have clients who are like, we trust you implicitly. I don't care about AI. Take care of it. We're going with your copy.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love those people. But that, you know, that's maybe a percentage, right?
Sure.
Then I have people who I just laugh, and you've probably encountered this as well. They come, but it, to the point of AI, they're like, well, why can't I just use AI? And then I feel like, did you come for a fight?
Yeah.
You can. I never try to sell myself. So I'm not a shark, right? I don't sell myself like that.
Those sound like the people that like need convincing, because they know that AI doesn't really work for them, and they're just coming to you for guidance.
Yeah. Well, guidance. And I think they want to make sure that I can, to your point, articulate why having Allison as a human is better than going to ChatGPT.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would say my central focus is that you're going to get a polished product that just doesn't sound like a machine. And sometimes I've even challenged them to try to prompt in a way that they think is going to be productive. And I don't give any instruction. I say, why don't you try to just do your about section or a bio or something? That is usually the best way to have people realize, oh, maybe that was, maybe this is why AI isn't there yet.
Yeah.
So I think if they haven't used it, the few times I've had to challenge them to say, why don't you just try it? I think they're surprised, one, that I'm saying, why don't you try it? But when they ultimately come back, it's because they've seen, okay, this isn't going to give me the, you know, the, I'm going to say not just polish, but the real writing that I thought I was going to get from this.
Yep.
And then I think there's kind of people, you know, everywhere in between. There's just too busy to do a lot of what they need to get done. And their philosophy is, I don't care if you use AI or if you're the human behind the curtain, just give me my product. And, you know, to be fair, there's a lot of products that we can push out that are hybridized between AI and myself. Or I have people, I just had a marketer approach me actually to do editing because there's a lot of AI that's used in that particular field. But there's a recognition that they need a top line editor for what they're putting out. I love those projects because maybe 80, 70% of it is already done. And then I'm coming in and putting, you know, something that's just not just more human, but obviously has all the personality of of something.
Yeah.
Without killing myself for the content. But it uplifts it. I think a very smart move.
Yeah.
Yeah. It uplifts it. I love that word.
Yeah.
But it gives it the trueness that I think people want. So I, you know, I'd say there's a couple, it's a couple different kinds of clients and people, right? The people who are like, take it away. Others somewhere in between. And there are people who push back, but I do think they know probably AI is not like, AI is not the thing, but they want to make sure that you can push them over the edge of why, okay, well, why do we need to use you?
Yeah, right? Sure. Totally.
Yeah.
I love that. So what have been the best projects that you've worked on? I mean, other than a couple that we've talked about or one that has come your way and it's been the mark for the writing concierge.
So there's a couple I like, and I'd say they're in very different spaces. Of course, having a higher ed background, one of the bigger projects I worked on was for, you know, a big university to do all the copy for their recruitment materials for first year students. I come precisely from that world. I know how to write to that world. And it was just really exciting to see they had also started a path with a firm that was obviously generating everything through AI. And, you know, you're speaking to students who maybe they're spending 10 seconds on a page, but if it sounds
blah,
bleh,
yeah,
they're just going to walk away from it.
Sure.
So that was a really fun project because it wasn't just one piece of collateral. It was five or six different pieces. Actually, it was more than that because there was recruitment pieces and then ones for each different college. That was great to develop because then you're creating a full suite of things that you're carrying the voice, you're carrying, you know, the message. The excitement is, you know, for me, first year students who want to get attract them really rallied. Yes. Yeah. Around why is this institution the one for me? Yeah. So that was a project I love because it goes back to my roots. Another project was probably one or two of the RFPs I worked on because I learned so much. The consultant that I work with very much works in a DEI space. And I will just say diversity, equity, inclusion, if someone's watching and don't know exactly
what
that is. But they are subject matter. The consulting firm is the subject matter experts, but they just needed a heavy lift to help with the writing side. But I learned so much in that. And even as someone who comes from public service, where I do think that we probably spent more time in understanding equity and inclusion, there's always something to learn in that space. So in addition to working with people who this is what they do every day and they're creating really a better world for people by virtue of the work that they do, I felt as someone who, you know, comes from spaces where DEI is talked about, this is a group that's really applying principles of why, you know, equity and inclusion are so important and having representation and making sure that diversity is honored. You know, and we live in a hard world right now where some of those things are really not politically,
I don't
get too far down the road.
Yeah.
They're not thought about and really they're not wanting to be included or thought about.
Sure.
So
and if
that,
they are, it's just surface.
Very surface. But this was absolutely in I don't want to say in the weeds, but in the realities of experience, right?
Yeah.
So again, the learning that I felt I came away from having worked on those projects because brains that are just so superior in that arena are, you know, coming to me to just, I'm just a facilitator of words, but I really enjoyed learning so much from what they were putting together. And really the call for that, those two RFPs are really to train other people to, I don't know that everyone's going to be an expert, but to better their understanding of of the field of DEI, right?
Yeah, no, totally.
So that was, you know, those are still favorite projects, and I will hopefully continue to work with that consultant, right? And then I'd say on a more daily basis, one of the things I absolutely love to do is bios. I love it. I can create them. I don't know what happens to my brain. I just go somewhere else, right?
Personal bios or like business bios? Or
personal
both?
Bios.
Okay.
I can create business bios, but it's really fun to say, okay, Sasha, you know, tell me the 10 things about you. I'm sure I can see it on this intake form. But then I go into a deep dive.
Yeah.
I look online, I go to LinkedIn, I'm looking at social media. And that might sound like a lot of steps, but my brain, something about that exercise, I do it so quickly, probably because I'm so excited by it. And although those are much smaller projects, I love when the product is someone realizes, oh, wow, I did all of that. Or, okay, you made me, you know, sound the way that I wanted to sound, because everyone has a problem writing about themselves, right?
Yeah.
Or most people do. So, you know, on a more daily basis, because I get to do so many of those, I love it. And I've gotten to know a lot of people because they've come to me word of mouth or through our networking group for bio specifically. But I've really gotten to have an appreciation for so many different people because there's such diversity in professional backgrounds and how people's paths were forged.
Absolutely.
That just, you know, that is, someone asked me like, what lights you up? And I, you know, I had a totally different answer for that context, but that's one of the things that lights me up. And just in general, those projects that we talked about, there's something that just lights me, you know, I work like, okay.
It just, it flows to you.
Exactly.
You are in your flow state.
Yes. Perfect.
I do have one last question. What is your dream for the Writing Concierge, and where do you want to see it take off? And what are projects that you want to call in?
I love that. I'm going to call them to me.
Yeah.
So what I want to do is, you know, I've been very much entrenched in as a almost now going into my second year business owner, every single detail. I want to take a step back because I've had many conversations with coaches now and marketing, you know, what I would say are now friends, but initially colleagues. I have to take a step back if I want to grow this. I can't just continue to be in all of the projects. So my goal is to be able to assign writers to those different columns. Someone for higher ed, someone for marketing, someone for government, nonprofit, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, I have 5 or 6 kind of arenas in my mind. I would be the top line editor and then, you know, scale that way so that I can take on, we as as a business can take on more projects because I'm assigning them out and delegating those pieces. And then what I absorb is the editing part. And again, editing is another thing that I really love. So I go through it. And it's not for lack of thoroughness, but it's just something that, you know, my brain switches into gear and I'm like, boom, you know, and I'm redlining everything. But that would be the goal, to grow it, to scale it in a way that we can speak still to a lot of industries, but be able to manage a lot more capacity because I have different people associated in each of those columns. And I'm sitting, you know, right now, I think owner is a great name, but I think a better name as I evolve the business is CEO, right? I want to be that person who is in charge of a bigger enterprise.
Yes.
And really, I always consider this, I'm building this empire, and I didn't start it. There was no small decision in starting this business, right? I so many things went into it. So I'm sure you and other entrepreneurs can appreciate.
Yes.
But once you start it, it's like, wait a second, I got to move. I have to do all of this stuff.
Yep.
But I think I can take more of that now and do exactly that. I've learned that I'm finding people who I can delegate to so that I can grow in a different way. And the second part of that is I want to evolve myself as the face of the business. And that has very much come from me learning from, you know, this marketing group and the guru, right?
Yes.
Or different gurus, I would say, in the field.
Yeah.
So that is what I'm working on now. One of the kind of the projects I have in the background is I'm guesting on podcasts. I'm doing video snippets. These are things that are being, you know, edited, you know, very professional way that are going to be the next evolution. Because right now, even my own social media, admittedly, is very basic.
Yeah.
But I want to evolve that to look, like it's at a higher level.
Sure.
And part of that is, a big part of that is going to be, I should say, really confirming who I am as a brand and giving it shape and identity. And I have a lot of ideas about what that will look like, but I'm not doing it in a vacuum. I have really great people who are helping me to get there. So it's building the business with more help.
Yes.
And then evolving myself as the face of the business.
I love that. So I did lie. I do have one other question, because you brought up a good point in terms of that, you know, there was a lot of thinking that went into before you launched the company. What was the, it's a roller coaster ride. Like you said, once you start, it's like, oh my God, I have to run, you know?
Yes.
And so what was the biggest hurdle? And we don't have to go into too much detail, but what was the biggest hurdle that you faced? And then most importantly, what was the one thing that kept you to continue to keep going?
That, I love this. I love that companion question. You know, I think we touched on it right before we came on the recording part of this, which is the financial side.
Yeah.
The biggest hurdle I faced was my learning curve and better understanding bookkeeping, finances for the business, what would eventually be my taxes, which are now all done.
Yes.
For 2023. None of that looks like your personal life. It's such a different world to consider that for the business. And maybe because, you know, I took for granted, I've been a pretty good self bookkeeper. I would do that without hesitation or without interruption. Oh no.
Yeah.
I forgot things. I didn't file things. I missed deadlines for certain things in between, even from like the banking and credit perspective. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
This is going to be abysmal. So it's the financial part that if I could go back in time, it's the one thing I would say I would spend more time understanding. But you get in and you're absolutely right. You just run.
Yeah.
So, but my message for someone considering a business, if they don't already have one, is to really sit down and have someone, whether it's a banker or a consultant, walk you through those big pieces so that you're not starting at a deficit, right? The other side of that is what has kept me going isn't even just the business itself. I have said this, it's so funny. I've said this probably 3 times in the last 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You can be in the working world and, you know, whether people love or like their job or don't like it at all. I hear, and I heard a lot in my previous worlds where people just were kind of just doing it. Right. And there were places, and myself included, where people were just miserable in their jobs.
Yeah.
And they thought, this isn't the thing. This isn't what I want to do. This isn't why I'm getting up in the morning. And even, you know, even for public service purposes, I knew we were doing amazing work, but there comes a point where you say, you know, is this what I'm built to do?
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah.
Is this what I came to this planet to do? So what I have realized in the entrepreneurial space is more often than not, I have come across people, yourself included, who not only are they, you know, high level professionals in their space and their field, but they're people who had, there's something to it. You have a certain confidence, you have a certain drive. And there is just something different in that than what lives in the generic working world.
Yeah.
And there's a personality, I think, that can be associated with that. But in total, when I'm in maybe our meetings or when I'm in even different spaces where I'm at a happy hour with other business owners, more than once I have kind of zoomed out and thought, this is like a happy group of people. They're fun. They're excited about what they're doing. They're all making their mark in their worlds. And these are people from all different worlds that I've had the opportunity to meet. And it has been one of the biggest things that's kept me going, because I've met, and this is a place that really is important to me, I've met so many women entrepreneurs and so many female entrepreneurs. And I learned the word founder from a good colleague of mine,
yeah,
and one of the organizations that I'm part of. I love that. You know, the foundational piece, the founders. So much of that resonates with me, and I didn't know maybe that I even needed it, but slingshotting into being a business owner has taught me that. And I'd say in this year alone, I have made so many deep relationships and friends with people, and you never get older, you're like, oh, I've made my friends, whatever. No, I have made amazing colleagues and friends in, I would say, the broad entrepreneurial space. And I'm so thankful for that. not just because I feel like I have people who I can talk to, but whether they know it or not, I'm learning from them.
Yeah.
I love understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's connection in a different way. It's connection we all need.
Yeah.
But it was not always the vibe or the culture or, you know, and I go back to, I think one of the things that always made me a little bit sad, and it wasn't everybody because I worked with some amazing people, right? But where you could see people who had promise, who had, you knew that they had ability, but they just didn't have the inspiration.
Yeah.
Or they didn't have maybe the confidence in themselves. I don't know that I've encountered any of that in this last year. And I both want that still for other people who I would love to kind of bring into the space.
Yeah.
But I also know maybe I landed here never thinking this would be a byproduct of me creating a business. I was like, I'm going to make a business and I'm building my own little empire.
I love it.
But that has been one of the biggest anchors for me is meeting other phenomenal people who are just happy at what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that gets lost sometimes in the working world. And that's really unfortunate.
Absolutely. I mean, that really goes back to it's community, you know, I mean, and community is the foundation. We've said foundation like 100 times, but it is, right. It is the key to keep on moving wherever you find that community, you know? So that was beautifully said, Allison. I loved it. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to keep you. This has been an unbelievable experience. Please tell us and tell the audience where they can find you.
Absolutely. And I want to say thank you. I agree. I love speaking with you, and you and I have always had such great rapport. So I'm Allison McComb. You can find A Writing Concierge of the same name on Twitter. Well, what is now X, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. And you can find myself on LinkedIn of the same name, Allison McComb. And I look forward to, you know, just further connections. And we're here for anything you might need. And even if we can't necessarily hit the mark with a project, we have a lot of referral partners too, and we work pretty easily through a lot of spaces.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time, Allison. This was great.
Thank you so much for having me.